It was my pleasure some 4 years ago, class of 2010, to deliver the convocation address. My job on that occasion was to do two things: to give you some clues as to what was about to occur in the next 4 years, and to provide you with some indications of what, in fact, would be required of you to be successful. Looking around, seeing that you are here today suggests that some of you paid heed to those suggestions. I also, on that particular day, took the opportunity to give you an image of the very place you had decided to come to, namely the University of Connecticut at Storrs, Connecticut. I did so through an anecdote. In the winter of 67, one cold, frozen day, I was being interviewed for the position of assistant professor. I'm walking across campus with three rather special, well-established, long-term professors of the university. And being an inquisitive sort of gentleman, I asked, "Excuse me, could you tell me where Storrs is, please?" And one of the professors, without much ado, he simply said, "Oh yes, Storrs is just over there." One of the two remaining professors immediately said, "No, I don't think you're quite right. As far as I can tell, Storrs is here." And the third professor just stopped everyone in their tracks, looked at the other two as if they were completely numbskulls, and said, gentlemen, Storrs is in that direction." And at that point, I realized I had come to interview for a job in the middle of nowhere. You did worse. You chose to come spend four of your best years of life in the middle of nowhere. When I made this reference to the middle of nowhere 4 years ago, I did so as a geographic reference. But the middle of nowhere is more than that. It's an invitation for a particular kind of learning. If you were in the middle of nowhere, you would have to become quite self-reliant. If you were in the middle of nowhere, you would have to be independent on a number of fronts. Those are the obvious requirements of being in the middle of nowhere. What's more subtle and much more significant is that in the middle of nowhere, you have to come to appreciate solitude, to recognize that in solitude you find comfort, strength, and inspiration. In the middle of nowhere, you have to be a person who can be alone, to be by one's self. Consider the opposite. Consider the middle of everywhere. This is not a bad phrase for the modern world. The modern world which is electronically immersed, the modern world of the internet and the cell phone. It has been suggested by the Connecticut essayist, Deserich, that in this modern world, it seems that it's less likely you will develop the appropriate appreciation of solitude, less likely that you will develop the ability to be by yourself, and more likely to develop an aptitude for loneliness, namely the inability to be by yourself. For the students of the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, you know only too well the significance of solitude. You know only too well the requirement of being prepared to be by yourself. They are the necessary conditions for sustained creative thinking, the necessary conditions for analytic writing and reading, and the necessary conditions for the development of concepts. There's a somewhat old-fashioned way of discussing a person who is educated. It goes like this: such a person you should be able to put into an empty room with no accoutrements, no outside contacts, and that person, for 1 hour in that room left alone, should express neither boredom nor feel lonely. I would like to trust that this particular class is a class for which that definition of educated holds. And if it doesn't hold yet, I would like to believe that in the near future you have the skills to make it hold. Now, this particular place that's in the middle of nowhere is, of course, Storrs, Connecticut. And Storrs, Connecticut is vaguely located in the northeast part of the land of steady habits. Storrs, Connecticut. One of my colleagues calls it the control group for America. Here's America, it chugs along undergoing change, and here's Storrs, Connecticut, steadfastly unchanging. I've been here almost 5 decades. I can tell you the only thing that really happened was they took the movie theater away. Can you imagine? We actually had a movie theater. Storrs epitomizes, perhaps nicely, this land of steady habits. I'm about to suggest that just as the middle of nowhere provides reasons for special learning, so does the land of steady habits. We are called that name by virtue of a historical document in the 1700s, written by a disgruntled loyalist cleric. What a strange man. Fancy being a monarchist and unhappy with the revolution that was occurring. Pity. London could have moved to New York. Would have been a very different world. But this particular disgruntled loyalist cleric called Connecticut the land of steady habits by virtue of its adherence, very strict adherence, to a set of laws purposely introduced to constrain conduct on the Sabbath. These are called blue laws, as you know, coming from the word blue nose, referring to a person who's somewhat prudish or a person who is somewhat moralistic. I would like to suggest that we need a generalization of blue laws. We don't want to call them blue, we want to call them glue laws, G-L-U-E, because their purpose is to provide constructive constraint on your lives, on your lifestyle. They act as adhesion, these laws, these habits, act as adhesion to pull together, to hold together the various dimensions of your particular lives. Benjamin Franklin, he said on one occasion, and he said many things, as you know, he said that the worth of a person to the world at large is given by what remains when you subtract your bad habits from your good habits. And the writer, the great Russian writer, Dostoevsky, pointed out to us, Riley, W-R-Y-L-E-Y, maybe not E, I'm forgetting my spelling, Riley, he pointed out that you spend the first half of your life acquiring the good habits and the bad habits that shape the second half of your life. Bear this in mind, graduates today, you have about 20 years remaining to develop the habits you need for the second half of your life in this modern era. Now, my personal opinion is that things like happiness are not, as it were, states of mind. Something like happiness is more to be understood as a confluence of appropriately good habits, much more a matter of the kinds of things you do habitually. Finding that right confluence, that right collection, is key. Habits are like muscles and the heart. They require exercising. I'm going to discuss a few of them in such terms. I recommend that you exercise regularly. Patience and perseverance. As one of the famous members of an American family whose name has escaped me for a moment, John Quincy Adams, thank you very much, memory. John Quincy Adams remarked, the thing about patience and perseverance is that they get rid of difficulties. They make them disappear. They get rid of obstacles. They make them vanish. Nothing that you wish to achieve will occur overnight. It occurs gradually, slowly, with you being patient and persevering. I recommend you exercise patience and perseverance in everything you do. With respect to the perseverance, that's the diligence, that's the hard work. And if we take Thomas Jefferson for a moment, Mr. Thomas Jefferson told us this in the coy way that he could do. He says, "Personally, I believe considerably in luck. I find the harder I work, the luckier I get. Hard work always trumps luck." Second of these exercises, I recommend that you exercise regularly the embracing of today, every day. Don't obsess about tomorrow. Don't give too much. Don't overuse what you know about the day before. The ability to see things now, to be in contact with the present, your ability to be appreciative of each day as you encounter it is very important, singularly important to your wellness. I recommend that as an exercise. I also recommend as an exercise that you appreciate something about ordinary humans. We are odd in this respect. We spend little time celebrating our successes relative to the time we would spend if, in fact, we had failed. Here's the exercise. Work so that you celebrate your successes with equal duration to the time spent despairing your failures. This asymmetry you should rid yourself of. You use patience and perseverance to get your successes. When you get them, you celebrate briefly. If you had failed, you could be despairing for months. This is an imbalance that I would submit is not one you wish to carry with you for the next 60-odd years. My final notion of exercise. Exercise exercising. You should come to love every stairway you see. Use them wherever and whenever. Walk always, walk everywhere. Eat wisely. All these other good habits about which we can speak, and we could trot them out in good numbers, your ability to enact these good habits suffers dramatically from ill health. You are in an era when we know so much about what matters. Exercise is basically simple-minded. Stairs and ordinary walking can do so much for you. 10,000 steps a day. You don't need to go to gyms. Use the ordinary surroundings in which you go about your business. I recommend that as an important exercise. Well, today, what are we doing? We are celebrating your decision, academically achieved, to leave the middle of nowhere. I've forgotten where I was. To leave the middle of nowhere in the land of steady habits. You have thrilled at the successes of Husky Athletics, and many times in this very building. You have been saddened by the shortening of the lives of fellow students. You have spent 8 periods of final exams. You have done endless lab reports, endless projects, endless papers. You have spent 4 summers and 4 winter breaks foraging for part-time work that would allow you to pay for all of this. And despite all of that, you have managed to make friends for life. And for some of you, as I know, you have probably made partners for life. You sit here now with mortarboards on your heads, and beneath these mortarboards, there's much happening. It's swelling up with pride. It's saturated with relief. It's begging to be let out for celebration. But also rumbling along underneath are those questions. What's next? Where will life take me? I would hope that your experiences in this middle of nowhere, in this land of steady habits, has given you the skills to answer those questions to your satisfaction. Along with my fellow faculty, president, provost, deans, I would like to wish this class of 2010 Godspeed. Congratulations and fond farewell.